When I graduated from college back in 1981, I think I had to pay back less than $1,000 in student loans. I was really lucky. Tuition was much lower then. I worked through school. I also received a Social Security check that was available at that time because my father was retired when I was in college. By comparison, last year in 2011, the average in student loan debt for a graduate of one of the University of Wisconsin campuses was $27,000. We are going to talk about why this is and what it means for students and parents and society this hour. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Tuesday, March the 20th. This is the first official day of spring. Earlier this month, the University of Wisconsin Board of Regents heard about the issue of soaring student loan debt and how the average school loan debt is now 5 times more today than it was 30 years ago. We will talk about why this is happening and what it means to students and parents today, and whether something needs to change to make college more affordable to more people. And we'll welcome your questions and your thoughts on this and your experiences. Are you paying off a student loan right now? Are you building up student loan debt right now? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Sarah Goldrick Rabb, Associate Professor of Educational Policy Studies and Sociology at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Good morning.
Good morning.
So how big an issue is student loan debt here in Wisconsin?
Well, it's an issue, and it's definitely, as your statistics pointed out, it's a growing issue here in the state. And it is becoming more of an issue as the state has disinvested from public higher education so that students and their families are expected to carry more of the burden.
What do you mean by disinvesting in higher education?
What I mean is that the state has been putting in less and less of the cost of providing higher education to the students in the state. And so just at a time when more and more families and students agree that they need at least some college education in order to get a good job, the public and the taxpayers, you know, but through the state legislature, are actually contributing less. And what this does is it shifts the burden for payment on to students. So, in fact, the reason that student loan debt is increasing is because the government is paying less and students and families are paying more.
Mm-hmm. Well, students just get a good job after they graduate and they pay it off.
Right. Well, that's the thought, and I do partially agree with that thought, which is to say that, you know, this is a good kind of debt. If there is such a thing, student loan debt in some views is a good kind. Unlike when you take out a loan for a car and you get the car, the minute you drive it off the lot, it starts to depreciate. So having the car doesn't help you to pay back the loan. But having a college education should, at least in theory, help you pay back your loan. So that's a good kind of debt. The problem is this is a lousy economy. That's the underlying issue here. You have debt, and it's growing, and students can't find jobs to pay off the debt. So if we had a better economy and we had jobs available, then this would be a reasonable amount, perhaps, of debt if we all agreed that students and their families should be paying for this.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know when taxpayer dollars are cut from the university, we have seen the university raise tuition. But I don't understand. Tuition has gone up, but it doesn't seem to have gone up, you know, tens of thousands of dollars, has it?
Well, no. I mean, a couple of things have happened at the same time. First of all, in the University of Wisconsin, we do see a fairly one-to-one step here where appropriations from the state go down and tuition goes up about exactly the same amount. So there are other states where tuition is going up faster than appropriations are going down. That's not the case here. But the other thing that's happened that isn't a coincidence in all of this is that we've had a recession. So families are less able to pay the amount that they're calculated as able to pay for purposes of financial aid. And so they have a greater need and the state is providing less at the same time. So it's sort of a perfect storm right now. You have the state making the cost of education a little less affordable for families, families having less resources to pay them, students taking on debt, and then entering an economy where there aren't jobs. You put those three things together, and that's why it feels like a crisis.
Mm-hmm. Well, what are the consequences if nothing changes?
Well, I think if nothing changes, we're going to see a couple of things. I mean, first is the evidence at least suggests that having debt does affect students' decision-making as they move into the rest of their lives. So people who have more debt tend to marry a little later, not buy the house initially, not go into professions that, you know, don't pay as much money, like social work and teaching, things that we do need them to do. So I think, at least in the short run, we're going to see more students be very concerned about those things, perhaps move back home with their parents, which, of course, the parents will have an issue with, mm-hmm. perhaps. And then, you know, the worst-case scenario is if the public doesn't agree that students should bear so much of this burden for higher education, then over time they're going to buy less college. You know, they're not going to go in as large numbers. I'm not somebody who thinks that absolutely everybody has to go no matter what, but we do know that getting the good jobs is going to require at least some college. So those consequences would be real for the state.
President Obama, in his State of the Union address, unveiled some new policies regarding this. In part, the plan aims to reward colleges that lower their costs. Is this a step in the right direction?
Well, his inclination was right, and his messaging was all wrong. The problem is that he aimed that. He delivered the message at the University of Michigan. It's a public university, not as public as Wisconsin, but the fact is that the things he was talking about are not things that the universities really have a lot of say over at the public institution. When the state cuts them, they raise their tuition. And what he did was tie penalties for raising tuition to the financial aid for the poorest of the poorest citizens. So, for example, in Michigan, where tuition went up, now we're seeing cuts to the aid for the poorest students. That's not what we wanted to see. What he wanted to do was to say, you need to direct more of your financial aid based on families' financial need, mm-hmm. and not based on what grades a kid got in high school, things like that.
So
the details matter.
Are there other federal policies that would help?
Well, you know, one of the federal policies that I do think would have some promise, and seemingly a lot of people don't know about it, is the income contingent loan repayments. So right now, people do have the ability to transform their loans, at least to some degree, into those that are income contingent, meaning that they'll only require you to pay back a proportion relative to the amount of money you're earning. So people should be looking into that. Another that's really important are these efforts to get the costs under control at the for-profit institutions where large numbers of poor students are attending. So a lot of this debt, I mean, yes, we have some debt at the public institutions, but when you hear these numbers, like $1 trillion in debt, a lot of that's being driven by students at private institutions and for-profits and graduate school where they're paying a lot of money. And that's, you know, getting a handle on why it is that for-profits seem to charge more money when they take advantage of federal student aid. That's something that the Obama administration has been working on, and it's worth doing.
Well, what do you see as the fix for the University of Wisconsin schools, the public universities in Wisconsin?
Well, I think the biggest fix is going to have to come from the citizens of the state of Wisconsin waking up and saying, hang on, we value public higher education and we do want to pay for it. We have to invest. We really don't have a choice about this. We have to send a stronger message to the legislature and to this governor that cutting higher education means paying more out of our pockets from our families, and we're not willing to do that. I mean, that's the problem. Right now we're saying there's so much debt, and yet students and families keep sending their kids to the colleges and paying for the stuff up front. And I'm not seeing them protesting at the Capitol saying, we're not willing to have you transfer the cost of higher education onto our backs.
We are talking with Sarah Goldrick Rabb. She is an associate professor of educational policy studies and sociology at UW-Madison. We are talking about the costs of higher education and the skyrocketing student loan debt that we are seeing. And we're wondering if you have a question or a comment or an experience that you would like to share. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us on Twitter at Joy Cardine Show. It's going to be mostly cloudy today. There is a chance of rain in the west, especially this afternoon. Partly cloudy in the east. It is going to be another unseasonably warm day. Some record high temperatures are once again predicted, with highs mainly in the 70s. And certainly hitting 80 degrees in spots. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. It's almost 20 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Tuesday, March the 20th. Well, you're going to want to catch Ben Marins after 5 o'clock this afternoon, especially if you're a fan of Wisconsin Public Radio talk show host Gene Faraca. After 5, during At Issue, Gene Faraca will conduct a farewell interview with Ben Marins, and we welcome your questions for her and your well wishes for her on her upcoming retirement. That's after 5, from 5 until 6 this afternoon. We are talking about student loan debt and what we can do about it with Sarah Goldrab, Associate Professor of Educational Policy Studies and Sociology at UW-Madison. Talking about this because we saw a news article recently. The UW Board of Regents was briefed on the problem of student loan debt in Wisconsin. 5 times the student loan debt today than 30 years ago. We're talking about why this is and what it means for students and parents, and we're welcoming your questions and your comments. We were just inundated on our Facebook page with people talking about their student loan debt. Sadie on Facebook writes, "My current debt 3 years out of college is $28,000. I make less than that amount per year before taxes. It takes 30% of my monthly income." Amber on Facebook writes, "$42,000 in student loan debt, working as a fast food manager. Don't know what the answer is." Jessica on Facebook writes, "Between myself and my hubby, who is finishing grad school this May, we have about $70,000 in school loan debt. I am praying that he finds a job right away so we can pay some of it down. It's scary to think by the time we get this paid off, we'll be looking at our twins being ready for college." That does sound pretty worrisome, Professor Goldrick Rob.
Yes, it absolutely does, and I am certain, and I can see from having talked with Wisconsin undergraduates for the last 4 years in a longitudinal study that it is absolutely upsetting to people. I think the hardest questions are, what are the right things to do from a public policy perspective that can really help these folks? And I have to say that it starts with jobs. We really do need job creation, and these folks need good-paying jobs so that we can help them in the short term. That's the best thing. But I also really hope that they're looking at income contingent repayment, which may be a solution for some of those folks that are really not earning much. They can convert some of these loans without having to consolidate them to income contingent repayment.
And I apologize. I know it's a Goldrick Rab. I didn't mean to
it's
say Rob.
Just fine.
Herb in Plainfield is with us now. Hi, Herb.
Good morning. Yeah, I'd like to recommend states, okay, element. Education system. I believe there's still the policy in place where the University of Wisconsin system will accept a certain number of course credits towards a degree, and the the price of the credit at MATC or WCTC, one of these places, is about one-third of what it is at the state university. And it's an excellent way to get your first 2 years of college out of the way by, you know, with only like, it's like I say, it's about a third if I remember right. And I've experienced both educational systems in the state, you know, as both a student and a teacher, and the VTAE system is absolutely excellent. And the classes that you get at the technical school are pretty much the same as what you get at the you know, in Madison or Oshkosh or Stevens Point or one of them places. So I'd like to see a lot more people take classes at the technical school.
All right, Herb, thanks very much. In case listeners didn't hear, because your cell phone kind of fuzzed out in the beginning, that he's advocating students should just go to tech school, or at least start in tech school. Professor
Goldberg? Yes, I think this is I'm really appreciative of this comment, and it's something that I have frequently recommended to folks. You know, we have sort of mistaken the message of go to college with go to four-year college right away. And that is not at all what anyone in public policy anyway is really trying to tell people. It is very much the case that this state has a very robust, very high-quality system of two-year colleges. Both the technical colleges and the UW colleges provide less expensive ways to begin post-secondary education. And I really do believe that we really should be taking better advantage of that and the transfer options. The problem is there really is some stigma as well around attending a two-year college. And this is only the kind of thing that we can work on together to stop talking about these places like they offer lower quality education. There's not a shred of empirical evidence that the education they offer is lesser quality. The only issue is whether you're actually going to transfer out to the four-year school if that's the degree you want. And that does require some know-how.
Thanks, Herb, for the call. There was someone who testified before the UW Board of Regents meeting who was talking about the student loan debt. And it was noted that perhaps kids today are borrowing more money than they need to so they can have a higher standard of living during college. Do you think that's a part of the problem?
This is a tough issue. I think, look, there are a lot of variations among students in higher education. So I'm sure that for some small segment of the student population, it is possible that they are borrowing money to finance, they want to have an iPod or they want to have a nicer dorm room, something like that. But like I said, for the last 4 years, I've been following Wisconsin undergraduates on financial aid, and I really don't see evidence that they're borrowing extra money for such luxuries. We see them borrowing extra money to do the kinds of things that the rest of us take for granted, to have enough food to eat, to put gas in their car, and occasionally to help out a family member in crisis. You have to remember that during this recession, all the other kinds of safety nets for families have been eroded. And federal financial aid is one of the few sources of support that students can lean on so that they can stay in college rather than have to drop out to support their families.
Next, we go to Sue in Waukesha. Hi, Sue.
Good morning. Mm. I have a niece who's in her second semester, first year at UW-Milwaukee. She does attend a four-year college right out of high school. She was a fabulous student. So was her twin sister. Her sister's going to a technical school closer to home. And the FAFSA program seems to turn a blind eye towards the fact that not only are her mother and new stepfather trying to put two children through school simultaneously, they don't consider the fact that there are two kids in school, and for that reason somehow provide them more money through FAFSA, They also turned a blind eye to the fact that the parents both work for the one's a school teacher and the other one works for the local government. And with the change in regulation through the state, they both lost 20% of their income. Also had to pay more towards their health care because of the Walker plan. And so my niece at Milwaukee, who's been living in a dorm, had to take out private loans just to pay for her dorm room. And they made the parents co-sign the loans. The kids cannot consider themselves independent, even if they consider themselves independent on their taxes. FAFSA does not allow them to, they tie all of the income together and make the parents co-signers. So even if the kids get lousy jobs after college, the parents are going to be saddled with this debt.
Sue, thank you. We have just a minute or so before a news break. Do we need to change the rules of financial aid?
Well, I would hope that your niece would please go talk to the director of financial aid at Milwaukee, because actually the FAFSA does take into account if there are multiple children in college. You're absolutely right that it doesn't take into account the benefits changes that have happened to our state workers, which obviously have had negative consequences. And you're right that she is probably having to, well, it's unfortunate that she's had to turn to private loans, and I really wonder whether the government-backed loans are possibly available to her. I really sympathize with the situation, but please, there's a very, very good financial aid director at Milwaukee that I hope that you can, advocate for her to speak with.
We are looking at the cost of higher education today and how student loan debt is increasing. It's five times the amount now than it was, say, 30 years ago in Wisconsin. Why this is and what can be done about it, we welcome your situation. We welcome your suggestions. We welcome your questions. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking with a higher education policy professor at UW-Madison about the costs of higher education and rising student loan debt. And we are welcoming your questions and concerns at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 6:36 on this Tuesday, March the 20th. Happy first day of spring. Our guest is Sarah Goldrick Rabb. She is an associate professor of educational policy studies and sociology at UW-Madison. And our next caller is Judy in Oshkosh. Hi, Judy.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I would have to say that I definitely identify myself as a liberal, so I hope my comments aren't taken wrong. But we have four children, we have a third one that's attending a public university. Our first two attended public universities in Wisconsin. It was La Crosse and Madison. They graduated without any student loan debt from their undergraduate. Now, their graduate schools, obviously, they're going to have debt. But we watched as many of our neighbors took multiple vacations. We watched as many of our neighbors bought their children snowmobiles and SUVs and, over-the-top Christmas gifts. When it came time for those kids to go to college, they were getting financial aid and taking out student loans. And I'm the first person to be sympathetic to families that are living hand-to-mouth and paycheck to paycheck. I am just, my heart goes out to them. But I would urge parents, before you buy your child a very expensive gift that isn't useful, we saved and we didn't go on vacations, and our kids didn't go on spring break to Florida. We saved every penny for their education because we didn't want them to be strapped. And so I would just urge parents to, if you can, just try to put some of that money away, even if you can only pay for 1 or 2 years of their undergrad. It's very much worth it.
All right. Thank you, Judy. All right. Thanks, Judy. Is that good advice, Professor Goldrick Rabb?
Well, I mean, it's certainly the case that families do need to be very forward-thinking right now. If your children are going to go to college, then by all means, you do need to plan for it.
Mm-hmm. So, in many cases, students still need loans?
Well, you know, again, it comes down to what the social contract is going to be between students and their families and the government for public higher education. You know, if we want to end student loans and we think that college is a must now, then frankly, we have to move towards putting in the more money as taxpayers and making a couple of years of public higher education affordable by making it free. I mean, that's the only choice we have if we don't want to take on this kind of debt, because it's not as if right now there's much other way to cover the costs.
Our next caller is Bill in Sun Prairie. Hi, Bill.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I'd like to give a little historical perspective on this issue. I'm going on 70 years old, and I've spent some time in academia. I've got 3 degrees, and each one is in a different field. And I've watched how the whole system has changed over the years. Back in 1966, I graduated with a degree, and I worked my way through on a work-study program. I actually would go to school for 3 months and then work for 3 months and pay for my tuition. The second degree, I had a good enough job that the employer split the cost of it 80-20, and the third degree was totally out of pocket. And there's been a couple of, I've thought about this, and there's a couple of trends I've seen. My first college was, let's call it Lean Six Sigma. They focused on the curriculum and education and didn't get into a lot of indirect overhead matters. I think colleges today have just ballooned into institutions which are, you know, they're in part educational, but they're mostly there to propagate themselves.
So, Bill, I just want to understand this. You're saying that maybe the high cost of higher education in some at some universities is because of spending too much on administration and overhead and not on
everything
the actual
else. But yeah. I mean, you can get an education today at home on the internet. You know, a very good education. Now, there's some classroom I understand that's necessary. But our universities are really not efficient producers of education.
All right. What about that, Sarah?
Well, certainly it's a very good point that some of these costs that have been rising are administrative costs and also costs in the area of student services. And these things nationally have grown a fair bit over time. I will point out that at least the analyses of the University of Wisconsin system don't seem to indicate that that's a driver of the cost. And I want to say I am not saying that because I'm employed in that system, as hard as to believe as that might be. I'm actually somebody who looks very hard at those numbers, and it really doesn't look like that's the driver in UW system. But nationally, it definitely is. And part of the reason is because students seem to demand these things. So the problem is that students are conflating educational quality with how pretty the dorms are and how nice the landscaping is. And so they show up and they seem to want these things, and so colleges provide them. It's a pretty classic response. If students would stop asking for these things and their families would stop expecting this sort of standard of living in colleges and reject those colleges that put their money into that manner, then they wouldn't be offering it.
What about, Bill said that he, I guess, financed a lot of his college education through work-study. Is that still an option?
Work-study is a very nice program. It is a very tiny piece of the financial aid picture. President Obama has proposed to double it. There is certainly some interest in that among the financial aid officers in particular and among some students. I will say that we know nothing about the effects of work-study money on student success. And where we need to keep our eye right now is on making sure that people graduate, because a partial degree is going to be a lot harder. The debt from a partial degree is going to be a lot harder to pay off. Now, I understand that he worked his way through college, and I know many people who did, but it's worth noting that the costs of college are so high now that he couldn't possibly pay for college by working full-time. In fact, he'd have to work 60 to 70 hours a week full time at minimum wage to pay for public higher education tuition and fees.
Yeah, and certainly you wouldn't be able to finish your studies in 4 years doing that.
Nobody is.
Yeah. Our next caller is Sarah in Madison. Hello, Sarah.
Hi, thanks so much for taking my call, ladies. I wanted to discuss the more recent government help that Obama has proposed. I think it started in April of 2010, where certain people who are in the public sector, if they pay off their loans on time every month, I think it's for 10 years, then a portion of them will be forgiven. Now, I graduated in 2003, so when I looked into this, as I am a nurse, I certainly did qualify, but by the time I kind of refinanced my loans and started the program, since I've been paying off my loans since 2003, it really didn't help me. Is there anything that's going to be done retroactively to help those of us who, you know, graduated some time ago but still have $25,000 in student loans?
Well, I mean, I honestly can't forecast the future in terms of what the president's going to do, but I would say that it is typically kind of hard with public policies to make them retroactive very effectively. And I really sympathize because obviously, you know, what's done is done and you have the debt. I'll tell you, I don't think they're going to do something like massive student loan forgiveness, such, you know, as the Occupy movement, for example, would be calling for. As much as that might be popularly supported by large numbers of people, it's not necessarily good public policy when, in fact, the good news is that you all have degrees. And the bad news is that there are large numbers of people from very poor families who can't even afford to go to college right now. And these two groups are being traded off against each other. So that's the unfortunate setup right now, where student loan forgiveness would mean foregoing the Pell Grant program, which is the cornerstone of access to higher education for low-income families.
Thank you, Sarah, for the call. Next, we'll go to Ralph in Little Suamico. Hello, Ralph.
Yes, hello. I just had a question. I hope your guest can help with this. My son has two student loans. One is with AES loan, and it's through the college, but it's administered by a financial institution. So that particular one, I had to co-sign for it, and it's at 3.25% interest, which isn't bad, but he's in graduate school, actually getting his doctorate right now. And as soon as he graduated undergraduate, they forced him to start paying it off. So I'm not quite sure why that is. The other loan was a Stafford loan, okay, and that was at roughly 3%. Now, I read in the paper that the government is talking about raising that to 6%. And the reason is because they said they have to pay the banks 6% for that money. And it just confounds me why the government is paying banks 6% for loans when they're actually paying less than 2% for government bonds, why they don't use their own money. It almost seems like a kickback to the banks, as far as I'm concerned.
Can you help us understand that? I did read that there's an effort to try to stop that interest rate hike on those Stafford loans, Professor Goldrick read.
Well, unfortunately, the interest rate hike on the Stafford loans, I have not heard what you've heard about the reason for it being what the banks are charging. What I can tell you is the interest rate hike on those loans is what is about to finance the Pell Grant program going forward. And so this is a really unfortunate situation where what they've had to do to save this program for needy families is essentially to take from other students. And I know that that sounds outrageous. It's unfortunate that, frankly, that the administration feels it's been backed into such a corner that it has to move one area of educational spending to another rather than to cut from some other areas that others of us would agree could stand to be cut. If your son is in graduate school, he really shouldn't have to be paying on his loans right now. I would really encourage you to contact, if you're not satisfied with what the advice you've been getting, contact one of the aid officers in the UW system or at the technical colleges, and maybe they can help.
We are talking about student loan debt and how student loan debt is skyrocketing, how it is five times more today than it was 30 years ago. And we're talking about why this is and what can be done about it. And we're welcoming your questions, your experiences at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Are you paying off a student loan? How's that working for you? Are you depending on student loans to put yourself or maybe your children through college? Let us know what questions and comments you have. It's going to be a mostly cloudy day today, a chance of rain in the west, especially this afternoon. Partly cloudy elsewhere, unseasonably warm on this first day of spring with highs statewide in the 70s. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. 9 minutes before 7 o'clock on this Tuesday, March the 20th. Coming up after 7, we will welcome in U.S. Senator Ron Johnson for the first 10 minutes of our program after 7 o'clock to talk about his concerns, his opposition to President Obama's health care plan. And then at 7:20 or so, we'll welcome in a healthcare policy analyst to talk about some of the new cost estimates on the healthcare overhaul, and we'll welcome your thoughts and questions about that coming up after 7 o'clock. Right now, we're talking about student loan debt, and our next caller is Duane in Waterloo, Iowa. Hi, Duane.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my phone call.
Thanks for calling. What's your situation?
My situation is I'm actually going to Hawkeye Community College in Waterloo, and I'm commuting from Decorah. So that's approximately 173 miles round trip every day.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, so is that's the closest school doing what you want to do?
No. Mm-hmm. It's one of the top 5% in the country for truck driving CDL licenses.
I see.
It's one of those ones where I decided to go for the quality, but when I started going, the gasoline was $3 a gallon, and it's gone up about 22%, $3.71 right now where I'm at. My concern is that due to other complications, I ended up getting with what the school said was the maximum amount of loans, and I'm running short. I have bad credit from being unemployed, and being unemployed, I went through my savings. My company went bankrupt, so I lost all my 401ks. But what financial resources? I've checked out the banks, and the banks aren't willing to make small loans. What resources are available if you're running short and you need more money to finish schooling?
Any help for Duane, Professor Goldergrab?
I do have one thought for you, and that is the Workforce Investment Act. I believe, based on your situation and the kind of training that you get, that you're getting in truck driver training, that you may very well qualify, I can't say for certain, for some WIA money. And so you need to find your local Workforce Investment Board office and see about getting a training voucher. I can't say for certain, but from what you've said, it seems to me like you might be qualified.
Duane, good luck to you. Luke in Burlington is with us now. Hi, Luke.
Hi, Joy. Thanks for taking my call. I just want to say I'm a little hesitant about asking this, hearing the answer to the question, but here we go. I'm currently an engineering student at UW-Milwaukee, and I probably have two or three more years left. But I'm also a returning student. I got my associate's back in 2003. So I've been collecting the max financial aid, being considered a junior or senior. But at the same time, I had to go back and restart all my math, so on and so forth. So my question is, is there a maximum number of years that I can be collecting financial aid as a junior, senior?
Yeah. And I'm so, all right, Luke, well, I'm glad you asked the question. He was afraid to ask it. But so is there, can students just keep on getting loans?
Well, no. I mean, there is some maximum, but I don't think that you're up against it. And I would encourage you, again, I know I keep saying go to the financial aid officer, but please go to the financial aid officer, because this is really complicated stuff, and you should never feel embarrassed or hesitant to ask a financial aid question. These are some of the most complicated things we have to deal with in our daily lives when we're trying to pay for higher education. And it does require a professional to give you advice. And her name is Jane Hoyan Clark at UW-Milwaukee, and she's very good. And, you know, even when you do hit the maximum, there is a potential for an appeal, and you may qualify for an appeal. So don't simply get a letter in the mail that says you're maxed out, and don't think for a minute that you can't do anything about it. Go and advocate for yourself.
Thanks again, Luke, for the call. We still have other callers and time for other callers, but I wanted to know, is there some general advice that you have for students or families right now who are just trying to figure out how to pay for a higher education?
Well, I think if they haven't already gone to college, I think it's extremely important that they sit down and have the tough conversation about what's the best way to get you what you want. So if there is, you know, a desire for a bachelor's degree, what's the best route to getting this? It doesn't necessarily mean going far away from home to the traditional school with the great football team, frankly. It might mean that you need to pick a school that you can afford more readily by being able to live at home while you go to college or something like that, and do 2 years or even do 4 years under those circumstances. It's critically important that you not buy college writ large in some sort of dreamy fashion about what it, you know, the glories that we see in the movies of what college looks like, but that you buy the college that is right and affordable for your family, and that you get as informed about financial aid as you possibly can.
Luke in Ashland is with us. Hello, Luke.
Hi. I just want to let you know I might lose service here. We don't have the best service in the Northwoods, but I just wanted to make a comment. You know, my grad school loans are at 6.8%, and I just locked in a mortgage at 3.8% over 30 years. And it just made me feel like things are kind of fundamentally flawed, the fact that I can get a mortgage much less expensive than my student loans. It's like I wish I had more of an incentive, or I feel like I have more of an incentive right now to buy a house than I would to go back to school. So I don't know.
It's an interesting observation, Professor Goldrick-Grab.
Yeah, it's a smart observation, actually, and that it is definitely striking.
Yeah. Well, do you see the cost of higher education and student loan debt continuing to rise for the foreseeable future, or do we have any hope that it might slow down some?
Well, I think the best hope for having it slow down is for the public to speak out. And I think that they need to speak out not simply about what we're seeing here, which is, frankly, this is the symptom of the problem. It's not the cause. Student loan debt is what we're seeing as a result of not financing higher education properly. And it's a result of a general sort of lack of attention to what is actually going on in higher education with regard to appropriations from states and things like that. I mean, I think we can all agree, you know, the private institutions are going to do what they will, but the public institutions either have to be supported by taxpayers or the students and their families that go are going to have to bear all of it. And so get involved in that conversation and tell your representatives and senators and congresspeople what you want to see happen.
Thank you very much for being with us.
Sure, thank you.
Sarah Goldrick-Rabb, Associate Professor of Educational Policy Studies and Sociology at UW-Madison. Thanks to Rob Ferret and to Bill Martins for producing the hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.